This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In today's program, you can hear our feature, The African Synod, The Church Alive in Africa Today. First, however, our bulletin of church news, followed by African News Panorama. We shall close today's program with Millennium Appointment. I am Festus Tarawali. Pope Francis slept well on his 10th night at Rome's Gemelli Hospital, where he's been treated for double pneumonia, the Holy See Press Office said on Monday morning. The statement by the director of the press office, Matteo Bruni, said the night went well, the Pope slept and is resting. The press office publishes a longer statement on the Pope's condition every evening. On Sunday evening, the press office said the Pope's condition remains critical, though he has not experienced any respiratory crisis since Saturday morning. In another statement on Monday morning, the Holy See Press Office announced that starting this evening, the 24th of February, the cardinals residing in Rome, along with all collaborators of the Roman Curia and the Diocese of Rome, responding to the sentiments of the people of God, will gather in St. Peter's Choir at 9 p.m. to recite the Holy Rosary for the health of the Holy Father. The statement added that Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin will lead Monday evening's recitation. Kelsey Garcia has this report on the prayer initiatives for the health of the Holy Father.
Last week, the Cardinal Vicar of Rome released a statement expressing the Italian Bishops' Conference's solidarity with Pope Francis. Recognizing how important communal prayer is, the bishops encouraged everyone as one large family to ask the Lord to grant the Pope the strength needed to face this delicate moment. Following this invitation to communal prayer, the community of the Gemelli University Hospital and the Roman branch of the Catholic University of the Sacred Heart wished to express even stronger support and solidarity with His Holiness Pope Francis during this time of trial and suffering through various moments of prayer. Starting today, February 24th, and for the entirety of Pope Francis' stay in the Gemelli Hospital, there will be an hour of adoration every day, from noon until 1 p.m. at the St. John Paul II Chapel in the hospital, followed by Mass. During the Mass and adoration, special prayers will be offered for Pope Francis, and the prayers dedicated to his health do not end there. At 4:30 p.m., the rosary will be recited in front of the statue of St. John Paul II in the square outside of the hospital, and Mass will also follow at 5 p.m. in the hospital hall. The Vatican has also announced a prayer initiative for the Holy Father. Starting on the evening of February 24th, the cardinals residing in Rome, along with all collaborators of the Roman Curia and the Diocese of Rome, will gather in St. Peter's Square at 9 p.m. to recite the Holy Rosary for the Pope's health. The Holy See Press Office stated that Cardinal Secretary of State Pietro Parolin will lead the first rosary. There has been a tremendous outpouring of prayer for Pope Francis' recovery from around the world. And in the Holy Father's Angelus Address, which he chose to have published and distributed on Sunday, he thanked everyone for their prayers for him. I'm Kelsey Gussie.
A dozen leaders from Europe and Canada were in Ukraine's capital Kyiv on Monday to mark the third anniversary of Russia's invasion. In an interview with Vatican media to mark the anniversary, the Apostolic Nuncio to Ukraine, Archbishop Visvaldas Kulborkas, laments that many have become desensitized to the ongoing tragedy in Ukraine and says that only Christ can bring hope against all hope. Deborah Castellano-Lubov reports.
Only the Lord God Almighty can bring hope against all hope. The Apostolic Nuncio to Ukraine, Archbishop Visvaldas Kulborkas, made this observation to Vatican media on the 24th of February, 2025. the third anniversary of the war in Ukraine since the full-scale Russian invasion in 2022. He began by stressing how, especially this Jubilee year, prayer is the precious gift of the Ukrainian people, which they must treasure and actively pursue. He gave the example of a civilian no way connected to military actions who was imprisoned in Russia for almost 3 years. This, he said, is the condition of thousands of people. This, he noted, underscores the importance of prayer, as there are truly situations that from a human perspective have no way out. At the end of this third year of full-scale war, he looked back at the past year and highlighted events. The first was the liberation of two priests on June 28th of last year. He noted it was uplifting to witness their faith. Another very significant and joyful moment he recalled was the visit of Cardinal Pietro Parolin to Ukraine last July. Another particularly joyful moment he recalled was a few weeks ago on the 1st of February, when there was a group of some 200 young Ukrainian Catholics who had the online meeting via video link with the Holy Father. He also lamented that for many international media outlets, especially secular ones, the war in Ukraine has become, at least in some parts, somewhat routine. But when you are here, he lamented, you understand that the number of casualties is not decreasing. This war, the nuncio said, challenges all of humanity. On many fronts, he noted, action is needed to push governments and international organizations to restore peace. And finally, he added, we all must grow spiritually, bear witness to hope. I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov.
The Diocese of Yola in Nigeria is asking for prayers for the release of two priests kidnapped on Saturday morning in the country's northeast. Father Matthew David Dutsemi of the Diocese of Yola and Father Abraham Saumam of the Diocese of Jalingo were abducted by armed men in the early hours of the 22nd of February when they raided the rectory where the two were staying in Gweda Malam, in the Demsa local government area of Adamawa State. In a note to the faithful, the Diocese of Yola asked for prayers that the two priests be released quickly and safely. We place our hope and trust in the intercession of the Blessed Virgin Mary, Mother of Priests, to bring them to safety, read the statement. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
Reports from Rwanda say more than 300 South African soldiers who were fighting alongside troops of the Democratic Republic of Congo against M23 rebels were repatriated on Monday via Kigali International Airport. They included 189 who were wounded last month in intense fighting with the M23 rebels before the capture of the city of Goma. Among those repatriated were also two female soldiers who were pregnant. The first plan was to repatriate them on Saturday, but this failed after M23 leaders denied them permission to go through Burundi, a country that is still fighting the rebels. The deal to evacuate them from Rwanda was negotiated by the United Nations and included the following: that the soldiers would not be humiliated, they would not be photographed by journalists, and would wear civilian clothes to avoid being portrayed as members of a defeated army. They were accompanied from Goma to Kigali Airport by United Nations troops based in Goma. Those who were critically wounded, including the amputees, were flown to South Africa in a chartered ambulance, while others were transported on an aircraft from the Botswana Air Force. Last week, the bodies of 14 South African soldiers who died in the battles at Sake and Goma arrived in the country. A contingent of about 600 other South African troops is still trapped at its base in Sake, where it is guarded and its movement restricted by M23 fighters. The head of the United Nations Political and Peacebuilding Mission in Libya, Rosemary DiCarlo, has warned that hope of creating a civil, democratic, and prosperous Libya has a long way to go because the unity and stability of the country is eroded by entrenched divisions, economic mismanagement, and competing domestic and external interests. Mrs. DiCarlo was speaking last Thursday at the United Nations Security Council, which 14 years ago permitted NATO to attack the country and overthrow Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi. Reports from West Africa say more than 180 Nigerian migrants were repatriated from Libya at the weekend to Nigeria. The migrants, who included 76 men, 92 women, 80 children, and 4 infants, were transported on a flight chartered by the International Organization for Migration. Many arrived in Libya more than 3 years ago with the hope of traveling to Europe, but failed to get visas and to find traffickers because Libya is closely collaborating with Italy and other members of the European Union who share the Mediterranean Sea to block and jail illegal migrants. You are tuned to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
The African Synod, the Church Alive in Africa Today.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. In this edition, you can hear the second part of an interview with the Director of the Justice and Peace Commission of the Southern African Catholic Bishops' Conference on Land Reform in South Africa. In last week's edition, Dominican Father Stan Muyebe spoke at length about the recently passed land reform law known as the Expropriation Act 2024, which has sparked heated debates in South Africa. Earlier this month, U.S. President Donald Trump signed an executive order cutting financial assistance to South Africa, citing the Land Expropriation Act and Pretoria's genocide case against Israel at the International Court of Justice. The government of President Cyril Ramaphosa has defended the land reform law as an attempt to rectify the injustices of the past and has pushed back against what it says is misinformation, pointing out that no expropriations have yet taken place under the law. Father Muyebe has since 2008 assisted black communities regain confiscated land. Sheila Pirish asked him about what he makes of the accusation of human rights violations against white farmers in South Africa by the U.S. president.
Let's talk about the allegations of a genocide. We're talking about a minority group. We're talking about the Afrikaners. In your work as Justice and Peace Commission, as a director of Justice and Peace Commission, you've done extensive work with regards to farmers, with regards to those seeking justice for land taken from them. What is your say with regards to these allegations?
We have been working in rural areas, especially agriculture sector, which is farmers and also the farm workers and communities around the farm. South Africa, there's a problem of crime, and this problem, it affects everybody. But at the same time, it's a problem that the high levels are among those who are most vulnerable. So in terms of crime, one of the category of those who are most vulnerable are the commercial farms, because they are very isolated. And we have seen a lot of incidences of farm violence. Farm violence affecting white farmers and also black farmers, because most of them, most of the commercial farms are in the rural areas and are isolated. It's a problem that the Human Rights Commission has highlighted and has insisted that the government needs to find a solution to this problem of farm violence. The allegation of genocide is something that has developed from these incidents of farm violence, but I don't think one can define them as looking at the legal definition in the international law of genocide. The farm violence that we see in the country one cannot categorize them as constituting a genocide. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done regarding security in the commercial farm sector. We have had organized in some areas, we have organized meetings between communities around farms and the farm owners, so that together they can come up with a plan of action. It has worked in some of the areas. In some of the areas, the farm owners and the communities around the farms have come up with the community policy forums, working together to address this problem. So it just highlights that there are a lot of problems in the country and also in the world which can be resolved through platforms of dialogue. And this is, I think, an area where we need to look at creating platforms of dialogue, and those platforms then to come up with the communities around the farms and the farm owners to come up with a joint solution to the problem.
Father Sen, thank you so much for your time and clarifying some of these very sensitive issues that the country is going through. But in your last remarks, especially with regards to the freezing or the cancellation of U.S. aid to different organizations, different projects, especially in the African continent and in this context, in the ACCBC region, which has done and has assisted lots of people, especially with regards to gender-based violence, AIDS, and HIV. Let's talk about that, the impact of the cancellation or the freezing of aid, financial aid coming from the U.S.
The church in South Africa has been at the center of response to the HIV/AIDS program. As some may know, there was a time the government was reluctant to provide treatment to people living with HIV, and the church was at the forefront of starting treatment programs across the country. Even when the government at a later time initiated programs for HIV intervention treatment, the church still has been at the center of these programs. And most of the funding was through PEPFAR, USAID. And I think what we have seen now, the freezing of the funding to HIV/AIDS intervention, it has reversed some of the gains that have been made in the HIV/AIDS intervention. There is a resumption of the funding, temporary resumption of the funding, but some of the harm has been done already, because some of the communities, some of the clinics, they had stopped the provision of the treatment. I think not only in South Africa, but in Africa as a continent, we need to have a conversation around aid dependency, to find a way in which critical programs that we have in Africa should be funded internally. But for that to happen, there'll be a need for ethical leadership. Particularly, we need to look at the issues of corruption, because if that is addressed, then there's no need to have a dependency. The countries will be dependent on the resources that we have. The other aspect that we need to look at is this problem of the debt crisis that a lot of African countries have, the payment of repayment of those debts, they deprive a lot of countries of their ability to allocate their resources to programs, social programs in their countries. So this year, South Africa is the president, has the presidents for the G20. As a church, we want to become a voice together with the South African government a voice around this problem of the debt burden, because if we resolve this problem of the debt burden, it can also help the African countries to move away from a dependency. Thirdly, we need to look at risk financial flows. It's a big problem. The money that the African continent is losing through illicit financial flows is more than the amount that the continent receives through aid. And there's something wrong with that picture. So we need, as Africa, as a continent, together with the global community, to find a way to resolve this problem, the problem of international tax system. We need to review the international tax system so that we can stop this risk financial flows. And with that, it will be possible, I think, to have an African continent that doesn't have any dependence. But as I mentioned at the beginning, the important thing is ethical leadership. We don't have that. We need to stop corruption. We should start there, and then the other things will follow from there.
That was the director of the Justice and Peace Commission of the Southern African Catholic Bishops Conference, Father Stan Muyebe of the Order of Preachers, speaking there to Sheila Purish. And that's all for this edition. Till the same time next week, I am Festus Tarawali.
And now, our feature Millennium Appointment. A section of the Dicastery for Evangelization, known as New Evangelization, has estimated that over 1.5 million pilgrims have passed through the Holy Door of St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican since the beginning of this year. The Vatican estimates that between 35 and 40 million pilgrims will come to Rome this year to take part in the Holy Year celebrations. The pilgrims come in big groups, small groups, as families, and as individuals. Last Saturday, February 22nd, a total of 60 superiors of all the entities, provinces, and sections, representing the entire Society of the Missionaries of Africa, made a pilgrimage out and crossed the Holy Door of St. Peter's Basilica. They had just finished a week-long meeting at the Society's headquarters in Rome. The group was led by Father Stanley Lubunga, the Superior General of the Missionaries of Africa. He spoke to Vatican Radio soon after and explained why the pilgrimage took place at this material time.
Our provincials and leaders have been present. We met in a kind of plenary council. We do that every year once. And this time they came to Rome, because in Rome there is the Jubilee. So we wanted to seize this opportunity to spend some time with them here praying also. We looked at other different issues, but we had reserved today for the pilgrimage so that we can together pray and cross the Holy Door. We were doing it as representatives of all the confreres. We are about 1,080. So all the provincials being there today, they crossed the Holy Door for all our confreres, and we were asking for the graces that we need for our society. We were also joined by the missionary sisters of Our Lady of Africa, the White Sisters, who were also founded by our founder, La Vigerie. Inside this Jubilee Year of the Church, we also are commemorating the bicentenary jubilee of the birth of our founder. That is why the sisters joined us also. So we associated that to pray for our two institutions, but also in a special way to think of our founder and the faith that he transmitted to us and to the African continent.
In addition to St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican, traditionally, holy doors in Rome are only designated in three other papal basilicas, that is, the Basilica of St. John Lateran, the Basilica of St. Mary Major, and the Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls. But this year, Pope Francis also opened another holy door in a church located at a prison in Rome, known as Rebibbia. The number of pilgrims who have crossed the holy doors of these basilicas is not yet public, but it is estimated to be in hundreds of thousands. Father Stanley explains how he was touched by the act of crossing the holy door at St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican.
Pilgrimage was a very moving moment to be able to carry the prayers of so many people asking us to pray for them. For me, I was really touched by this faith event and the theme that it carries, that we are called to be pilgrims of hope. The short distance that we covered, praying together, thinking of what is happening in our world, we really need to welcome and spread the good news of Jesus, because it is about peace, and this is what our world needs, and we should never lose hope into a better world. This is what I would like to invite everyone to join this prayerful moment as Christians, and to be really pilgrims of hope, because we can still make the world a better place.
That was Father Stanley Lubunga, the Superior General of the Missionaries of Africa. And that was Millennium Appointment for this week. This has been Johnny Baptist Tumusime.
You have been listening to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.